Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pitcher's Eye with Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks manager Michael Schlecht. Pitcher's Eye is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Fargo manager questions about the Redhawks, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Michael's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Michael talks to us about the naming of Matt Rao as the team's new general manager. He explains why the Rich Eisen rule may not be that great for baseball. And a woman, unfortunately, learns that Michael does not have an available younger brother. So let's join Pitcher's Eye. Let's welcome back manager Michael Schlecht. Michael, do you have team updates you'd like to provide to us?
Well, I think the biggest news this week is that we've named our new general manager, Matt Rao. We're real excited about this. Matt is a wonderful, wonderful human being, first and foremost. I've had a chance to meet him. We've had a lot of talks, getting on the same page, setting the foundation of working together, and I'm very excited about this. He has a very extensive resume in sports, in a bunch of different fields. He's done some sales. He's actually been an assistant general manager at the minor league level. He's done promotions. He's done so many different things in the game, and so that what that brings to the table is a really well-rounded individual in that role. And everyone knows Josh Buchholz. You know, he's a legend in his own way, from the amount of times, the amount of years that he's been in, and just knowing, you know, like the back of his hand, what to do in case of a rain delay. You know, the operations side, the sales side of Josh Buchholz was a big asset to the Redhawks. So obviously, as our president, Brad Thome, said, you know, big shoes to fill, but Matt's the guy to do it, so we're excited about that.
A Fargo guy, too, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, he went to Fargo North High School, knows the community, actually was employed by the Redhawks early on in the organization's history, did some stuff on the grounds crew and some promotions and various things. Like I said, I've had some really good conversations already with Matt about the direction we're headed and the things we want to do, so definitely excited about that. From a roster standpoint, we're almost full. We made a trade a few days ago with Cleburne, Carlos Pimentel veteran, righty. So we sent him there, and now we're looking ahead here to spring training. We're going to see what comes out of there versus what holes we need and what fits us best, and then we'll be ready to roll come early May.
That's excellent. Well, let's head to fan questions. We first of all start with James. He says, Skipper, I know that this is not a question, but this had to be a really tough situation to come into, and I just want to applaud you on the way that you have transitioned into this job. There is no doubt you will serve the Redhawks proudly.
Wow, that really means a lot to me. Thank you very much for that. It is never an easy situation to step into a managerial role, given the circumstance of the previous manager being let go. But trying to maintain a professional stance, trying to say, all right, from a human standpoint, it wasn't the easiest thing in the world to happen. But from a business standpoint, we have to keep moving here. We were in the middle of a pennant race, and frankly, the guys in that clubhouse deserve to have my full focus and attention as we moved ahead, once they named me the interim manager. So it wasn't easy. Once we got rolling and moved past it, it was a lot of fun, and I do appreciate that compliment. Thank you.
Randy would like to know, he says, is it weird when you first became manager and you hear fans screaming about why the manager would make such a quote-unquote dumb decision, and then you realize they're screaming about you?
Yeah, so one thing I learned, that's actually a good thing when you do realize that. So I grew up in, professional baseball at age 18, was drafted out of high school, had never really left home before, and stepped onto a professional mound and began hearing things yelled at me and about me as a pitcher. And so once you get your first taste of heckling, you begin to realize that it's something that you need to, you have a choice. You can either listen to it and let it get you, or you let it roll off your back and you laugh about it or even have some fun with it. So that's the beautiful thing about baseball. Fans are, it's intimate. Fans are sitting behind you. They're sitting around you. They have almost a better view of the game than we have in the dugout because they're sitting elevated and they're watching everything happen. So it's beautiful because they get to have an opinion. They're allowed to have an opinion. They're allowed to share that opinion. I get to choose whether or not to listen to that opinion. At the end of the day, we're doing exactly what we need to do or what we feel like is best on the field. And even just like amongst coaching staff, you're going to have disagreements. You're going to say, well, maybe this is better. I think this is better, whatever it is. As a manager, I'm going to make the final decision, obviously consulting everyone around me. But when you hear the fans yell, it is a little odd. It was weird for me the very first time because I said, wait a minute, that was my decision. I don't think they like it very much, and that's okay. Because honestly, at the end of the day, I'm always learning. And just like the people that come to watch these games aren't perfect, neither am I. Neither is anybody. And so, again, yeah, they can yell. They can give their opinion. I'm going to let it roll right off my back.
Andrew would like to know, he said, did you hear that rule that Rich Eisen is suggesting that to make baseball more exciting, to allow the losing team to bring anyone they want to bat in the ninth instead of having to go with who is scheduled to bat? Isn't that just stupid?
Well, we don't say that word at my house with a 2.5-year-old. I'm just joking. No, we don't. But so when I think about these different rules and ways that people are coming up with ideas about baseball, I cringe, to be honest with you, because I'm a baseball purist. I feel like the game should be played the way that it was meant to be played. I understand there are some things that need to be changed. There are things that have changed over the course of time. The game has changed. But in regards to bringing in whoever you want, I don't know. If you want to see a rule like that, wouldn't you be better suited to go to a local park, or play a game in your backyard and implement that rule rather than a professional baseball? That's my opinion. But again, it's beautiful that everybody's allowed to share their opinion, and that's what makes America great. That's what makes the game great, is that there are so many opinions and so many ideas, and you're allowed to speak them. That's what I love about it. So I wouldn't say that it's a bad idea. I just don't know that it's right for baseball at this point.
Well, if they're going to have a rule like that, why not just have Bryce Harper bat 27 times a game? And, why stop
that's
at that?
True. Right, exactly. Yeah, why not let, Verlander pitch every game? Why not let this guy bat? You can come up with all these ideas, all these variations, all these different ways that the game could be entertaining. But at the end of the day, I love baseball just the way it is. And I think a lot of other people do as well. And so let's celebrate that.
We have a couple of questions from Doug. The first one is, what do you think makes a Hall of Fame career in baseball?
Wow, that's a really good question. First and foremost, you have to look at a benchmark of what the other Hall of Famers have done, depending on what the position is, where the person played. If you're looking at shortstops, let's look at Ozzie Smith. Let's see Cal Ripken. Let's look at these guys that our first ballot Hall of Famers, what they did in their career. Obviously, those two guys are really special, but let's see what made them get into the Hall of Fame. So there are some benchmarks, but then recognizing that everybody's an individual as well, and everybody gave different things to their team or teams throughout their career. Like John Smoltz is a great example. He was a great starter for a long time. However, he also was able to impact games as a closer as well. And so you could argue that he made it in as a closer, he made it in as a starter. So many different players have done so many different things. So a Hall of Fame career to me is obviously somebody who, over a long, long period of time, obviously helped their team to win. They're on the same side of the coin. There should be players who played for a long time on losing teams. That individual successes should get you into the Hall of Fame. You shouldn't look at just the team record, but somebody that made an impact over a long period of time in the team that they were on obviously put up incredible numbers. I would love to see guys that did amazing things in their community celebrated as well.
That's a great idea. Doug would also like to know, what would you want to see happen with guys that use steroids? Should they get in the Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah, that's obviously a hot topic right now in today's game. Just like anything, you know, I think of our judicial system. I think of laws. I think of at the local level, at the state level, at the national level, there's a reason that we go, that if you make a mistake, you go to court. If you make a bad decision, you go to court. There's a jury. There's a judge. And what I mean by that is there's got to be some proof. And, of course, this is just my opinion. I feel like if there's proof that these individuals took steroids and altered themselves knowingly, if they knew what they were doing was cheating and they did it anyway, that's one thing. I don't think it's fair to assume that an individual did steroids and then not let them in based solely on an assumption. So my opinion would be that they, you know, if there's never any proof that an individual did steroids medically or, you know, witnesses or anything like that, I think they should be considered for the Hall of Fame. But if there is proof about it and there's people that saw and there's medical things and or they admitted or whatever else, and they knowingly cheated, I don't know that that necessarily deserves a Hall of Fame nod.
That's a great answer. Owen would like to know, he says, reaching the level of playing professionally is a dream of mine. What are some of the things that you did to make sure you reached that level?
That's a really good question. I appreciate that one. So, you know, using my own life, there was a lot of hard work. There was a lot of dreams, a lot of things that I looked at, and I said, I want to be there one day. It was, you know, some would call it visions. Not like seeing things that aren't there, but having a vision of having a goal, having a dream of reaching the big leagues or reaching professional baseball was something that I did. I already said hard work. You know, with hard work comes actually following through on that. It's easy to say I'm going to work hard because I want to be a pro baseball player, and then, you know, a week or two passes and you're like, well, that's not, I'm not going to, you know, work that hard. There's no way that guys, you know, work this hard all the time. Maybe I should take a few days off or whatever it is. I think it's that consistent and constant work ethic. And I think when you get that foundation of this is the bar that I've set, this is how hard I have to work, and if I can work this hard, I'll at least put myself in a better situation or have a better chance of making it. It's really hard to play professional baseball if you look at the percentages. And then from there, you know what I think hinders people more than a lack of talent is a lack of almost self-evaluation. It's like people think so highly of themselves a lot of the time when it comes to sports that they don't want to say what they need to work on. Like for me, when I was playing, the reason I say that is because I was one of those people. I almost had too much pride in myself to recognize that I lacked a put-away pitch. I had a good fastball. I had an okay changeup. But I really needed a breaking ball. And I couldn't self-evaluate. I kept wondering, well, why are my strikeout numbers so low? Why can't I strike anybody out? If I get two strikes on a guy, why can't I put him away? I would ask the right questions. But then I was, I was almost too prideful to answer it and say, you know why? Because your breaking ball's terrible, Michael. I couldn't say that. I should have. And so when you're looking in to play pro ball, it's like, what do you have to have? What do you need to have to play at that level? And now let me be honest and self-evaluate myself and recognize what I really do need to work on in order to reach that level.
Interesting. Craig would like to know, I'm kind of curious about this myself, why doesn't anyone throw the screwball anymore?
There's a lot of variations of a lot of different pitches. And so, in my opinion, when the initial screwball came out, it was something that was thrown. I don't know necessarily the medical implications of a screwball. I'm guessing it wasn't the best on your elbow. And so, from there, you know, that extra pronation or the way that you hold it, you know, and this is from people that that coached me in the minor leagues that threw a screwball that said, you know, it really hurt my elbow a little bit, or it didn't feel good, or I felt like the way that I threw it wasn't good. So I don't know if the baseball community that embraces technology, there's so many things out there. A good friend of mine, Will Carroll, is involved in a group called Motus. And they have the arm sleeves that track everything now. All the way, you know, it's scientifically talking about arm speed, pronation, you know, grips, and all these. It's amazing what they can do nowadays. So I'm wondering if, and I don't know the answer, this is just speculation, I'm wondering if pitches are falling off the table a little bit more as to how they're used, or if they're even used, because as technology increases, so does awareness of what it's doing to your arm. And so they're moving towards pitches that, or alternatives to pitches that might still be as nasty, but they're not quite as hard on your arm. That would be my speculation as to why.
That's interesting. Sean asks, what was the most enjoyable part of being a professional baseball player?
Well, before I get into that, the first thing I want to say is that if I could think of any regret that I had, it was that I didn't enjoy it more. I felt like I got a little bit too focused on the reaching the big leagues, or the day-to-day, what am I going to do now, how am I going to do this, you know, what do I need to do to impress? But I almost forgot to look up at times and say, what a blessing this is. Toward the end of my career, I had that realization, and I said to myself, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to enjoy this thing. I'm going to enjoy the ride. And it was really cool to say, first and foremost, that every day I got to put on a professional uniform. I got to play baseball and get paid for it. Not that much money, but I still got paid. And so competing against the top percentage of people in the world, going out there and getting paid to play a game, and really just saying, you know what, I'm doing the same thing at 28, at 30, that I was doing at 8, was a huge blessing for me. And I think that overall, that experience was the best part of being able to play professional baseball. I can think of one really cool moment that might answer the question a little bit more. Was when I was in high A, I was in the California League, and I was playing for the Bakersfield Blaze, and we were up in Stockton playing the Ports. That was the high A Oakland Athletics at the time, I believe. And I just remember toeing the rubber and just guys that were on rehab assignments that I had watched on TV, whoever they were, they were coming through Stockton, and they were batting, and I was like, I watched you on TV when I was little, or, you know, I saw you in the playoffs a few years ago, or whatever it was, and now I'm pitching against you. I know it's not like we were at the same level, but toeing the rubber, looking down to the catcher, and recognizing the guy who was in the batter's box because he was a major leaguer was pretty cool for me.
That's awesome. Our last question this week is from Becky. She says, listening to your show and reading the article about you, you were so sweet about your wife and how much she means to you. It makes me wonder, do you happen to have a single brother?
So I have good news and I have bad news. First off, thank you. My wife is my rock, and I love her so much, and she is literally the reason this family keeps ticking. With that being said, I do have a brother. He's a couple years younger than me. That's the good news. The bad news is he is in a relationship, and so I'm sorry you're out of luck there.
Sorry, Becky. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much.
We want to thank Michael Schlack for joining us on Pitcher's Eye this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks manager, please send them to us at askmichael@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askmichael@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Pitcher's Eye.